Let's open our Bibles to Acts chapter number 2 and talk about the beginning of the Church of Jesus Christ. The date Pentecost was part of the Jewish calendar system that served as a historical reminder of the day on which God gave the Jewish people the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai. It was 7 weeks after they had departed from Egypt. The way that it worked in the system of history was that when the Jewish people celebrated their week of Passover and unleavened bread, they would start counting from the first day of the week that fell during that particular holiday, which commemorated the departure from Egypt. 7 weeks later, so 50 days, would bring them back to the first day of the week again, which is why it's called Pentecost, means 50 count. That day, as I said, commemorated the day on which they were at Mount Sinai and received the covenant. But there's also a growing season, agricultural season connection to the date of Pentecost. When Passover rolled around, and that first day of the week that fell during the holiday of unleavened bread occurred, the high priest would go out into the barley field near Jerusalem and cut a singular sheaf of grain out of that field, bring it back to the temple, wave it in front of God's presence, and this became known as the first fruits offering. It was an indication that all the grain that came in from this point forward was due to God's grace and kindness and favor toward Israel. So 50 days later, apparently there was a similar such ceremony where the high priest would go out into the wheat fields near Jerusalem, because wheat was the next big grain to harvest, and he would cut a singular sheaf of that and bring it back in and wave it before God. And this marked the beginning of the wheat harvest. So what we see here in the text in front of us is prophetically significant, because we will see the beginning of the new covenant on the day of Pentecost in AD 33. And we will also see the beginning of the larger harvest of souls now that Jesus has died and risen from the dead and ascended on high, and his offer of salvation is going to be pushed out into the world for anyone and everyone to embrace. So with all that background, let's go ahead and dive into the inspired text of Acts chapter number 2. Acts chapter number 2, when the day of Pentecost arrived. And for our purposes, in that particular year, Pentecost fell toward the tail end of the month of May. Usually it happens right at the tail end of May or right at the beginning of June, always 7 weeks after Jewish Passover. So when the day of Pentecost arrived, they were all together in one place. Now, I emphasize this as we closed up last time. The all there, the they there in verse 1, is a reference back to the full complement of apostles, the 12 men that chapter number 1 ended with. That is very important to understand, that this immersion of the Holy Spirit in a special way only impacted on the 12 apostles, no one else. That's very, very important to understand. So verse 2, suddenly there came from heaven. So this sound is coming out of the sky. A sound like a mighty rushing wind. And it filled the entire house where they were sitting. Now I want to give my take on the house that's referenced here. A lot of people picture this as happening in the upper room that was mentioned in chapter number one. Perhaps, and most probably, the upper room where the Last Supper occurred, which would be on the western mountain of Jerusalem. The mountain that is referred to as the High City, the place where the richer people lived. I don't believe that that is where this event is occurring. I think this event is occurring at the Temple Mount, in the temple courts. And the reason why I feel comfortable with that is because the Jewish, a common Jewish way of referring to the temple was the house. And it wasn't just simply the shrine building itself. It was the entire Temple Mount complex was referred to as the house of the Lord. So I believe the sound coming out of the sky swept down over the entirety of the Temple Mount and even fell into the areas around. Verse 3, and divided tongues as of fire appeared to them and rested on each one of them. Now this phenomena, again, I want you to imagine it with me. The Holy Spirit in the Old Testament appeared in physical form as a tower of shining cloud by day and a tower of fire by night. This is the Shekinah, the presence of God that led Israel out of Egypt through the wilderness and into the Promised Land. The presence of God which filled the tabernacle, chased the priests out, filled the temple at its dedication, chased the priests out. That physical, visible presence of God in the Holy Spirit is what we're seeing here. The return of God's physical Holy Spirit to the temple. We can go back to the book of Ezekiel. And we see God's visible presence departing the temple shortly before it was destroyed. The presence of God gets up out of the holy place, off of the Ark of the Covenant, goes through the front doors of the temple, through the front gate of the temple, and keeps going eastward, passes out of the temple complex, and then finally disappears over the Mount of Olives. So here we have the return of God's visible presence on this particular day coming to the Temple Mount. Starts apparently as a singular fire and then divides up into 12 parts and goes upon each of the 12 apostles and rests on them. And I would suggest to you, just basically overwhelms them, soaks into them. And that is something that people saw happen right in front of them. Now, something else happens at this time. Verse 4, they were all filled with the Holy Spirit. Let's, again, set the record straight here. We know that the apostles in the upper room on the night of Jesus' resurrection, John tells us this. Jesus blew on them in a demonstrative illustration and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit." And they received the Holy Spirit that night. That's the indwelling Holy Spirit which comes into every believer when they become a follower of Jesus Christ, when they become a believer in Jesus Christ. We're actually going to see some of that mentioned in the sermon that Peter will deliver on this very day. This coming 50 days later is distinct from the indwelling gift. This is the supernatural immersion that Jesus had promised for these 12 men so that they could then become the leaders of the church, become the primary witnesses to the resurrection. So that's what's happening on this day. So these guys are filled now in a supernatural fashion with God's Holy Spirit, and they began to speak in other tongues as the Spirit gave them utterance. So they began speaking in languages that they never learned by normal means. Now, I believe, and I've told you before, that all of these guys are at least bilingual. They speak Aramaic, which was kind of the language of the Jewish people from the time they came back out of Babylonia in the 5th century BC. But they also speak Greek, which became the universal language of the entire Middle East in the time of Alexander the Great and after. So we're talking for the last several centuries, it's been the universal language of the Middle East. So they are at least bilingual. A few of them, perhaps, might be able to understand some ancient Hebrew, because we know that there was at least one particular faction of Pharisees that believed that you should understand the Hebrew of Moses' time and after. But they do not speak tons of other languages. There just wouldn't have been a need for it. But we are about to see them suddenly be able to do that. So this is the miracle of speaking in tongues, and it's provided by the Holy Spirit. Verse number 5. Now there were dwelling in Jerusalem Jews, devout men from every nation or ethnic group under heaven. When Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles happened every year, the three mandatory festivals, Jewish people from all over the Jewish homelands, the old promised land, they were expected to come. The adult men were expected to come to Jerusalem. It was a mandatory festival. But we know that Jewish people from all over the Middle East would often come to at least one or two of these things each year. And then Jewish people living all over the known world, basically all over the Mediterranean basin and all over the wider frame of the Middle East, they would try to come as often as they could, which might only be once in their life. But the impact that they that had was that every time there was a festival like this, Jerusalem was jam-packed with people that spoke all sorts of different languages from around the known world. Yes, they spoke Greek because that was the universal, but they spoke all the other languages and dialects from wherever it was they happened to be living. And so that's important to the story. Verse 6, at this sound, what sound? The sound of this mighty rushing wind, and then suddenly all these guys starting to talk about God, talk to God in all these different languages, one right after another. So at this sound, the multitude came together and they were bewildered because each one was hearing them speak in his own language. Okay, this is another reason why I don't think this is happening in the upper room. We know that 120 people had been in the upper room earlier, but there would not have been enough room in the upper room for thousands of people. And yet we will see thousands of people respond to the message that we're about to see. So it makes much more sense that this is all happening in the temple complex, inside the house of the Lord. And so the news gets out real quick that something weird is happening in some part of the temple courts. And a crowd starts pushing in to be where this is happening. And when they push in, they start hearing their particular dialect, not just simply a language, but a dialect of that language. And all of us understand dialects. I grew up in southern Missouri, and so I grew up with a very specific dialect of English. And then now I've lived in northern Indiana for a good long time, and I know that there's this Hoosier dialect or this Michiana dialect that's up here, and I've adopted many parts of that. And so that's just the way it works in all the different languages of the world. When you come from a particular region, you, especially a smaller region that uses a dialect, you can recognize that dialect when you hear somebody else speaking it. And a lot of these people that are gathered in Jerusalem, they have traveled here with other people from their particular region, their particular town, city, people that speak their dialect. And they would have known on the trip here many of the other people that came. And so they could identify very quickly something weird is happening because those people are not from our area, and yet they are speaking our dialect precisely. And so that's the miracle here, is the apostles, 12 guys, are speaking dialects from all over the known world, one right after the other. They seem to be switching back and forth. And so verse 7 says, they were amazed and they were astonished, saying, are not all these who are speaking Galileans? Again, clear evidence. We're only talking about 12 guys. All 12 of them came from Galilee, and they can identify them as Galileans. How? It's possible that the way they dressed identifies them as Galileans, but it's also possible that some of the people responding to this had heard these guys speaking in their normal language, their normal Galilean dialect. And now they're suddenly doing this, and they're like, what? How is it that we're hearing each of us in his own native language, his own dialect? And then we go through the list. Are you ready? We're going to talk about where these places are. Parthians. That's effectively northern Iran. And Medes, more around southern Iran. And Elamites, that's again, same sort of region, but three different dialects that are being spoken in that same area of what we call Iran today. And residents of Mesopotamia. So there's all sorts of other areas in the between the rivers region. We call it Iraq today, and not just Iraq. There's also Syria and Kuwait. A little bit of Saudi Arabia is involved in there too. Armenia, all of that area north of the Promised Land. That's Mesopotamia. And they had a ton of different dialects. And Jewish people lived in those regions in communities. In fact, there were a lot of Jews in Mesopotamia, because that's where the exile of the northern tribes happened when they were taken away by the Assyrians. And that's where the Judeans went when the Babylonians took them away. And a lot of those Jewish lines stayed in place. Not all of them went back to the Promised Land when they had the opportunity. So they're saying, we're hearing dialects from all these different parts of Mesopotamia. Judea, of course, has its own dialect. Cappadocia, that's middle of Turkey area. Pontus, that's also up in Turkey. Asia, which is the far western end of what we call Turkey today. And Phrygia and Pamphylia, that's central Turkey today. All of these had their own little language and dialects. And so they're hearing these things. Egypt had its own dialect, and parts of Libya belonging to Gerene, which is effectively North Africa coast. And then visitors from Rome. Romans speak Latin. And so that's both Jews and proselytes that have arrived from Rome, and they speak Latin. Cretans, so from the island of Crete, and Arabians. Arabia wrapped around the eastern and southern sides of the Promised Land, and they had different tribal dialects for the people living in that part of the lower and eastern Middle East. And so there's a lot more than 12 listed here, a lot more than 12 dialects indicated here. And so this is a matter of the 12 apostles. They're just talking to and about God, and people are listening, and they're shifting. You know, Peter might spend a little time on one dialect, and then he swaps to another dialect, and then he swaps to another. And Andrew's doing the same thing. Philip over there is doing the same thing. Nathaniel is. All these guys are just going boom, 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 boom through all these dialects. And so they say here, verse 11, the rest of it, we hear them telling in our own tongues the mighty works of God. Now, they're not preaching. Let's make that very plain. What's happening here is a praise session. Later in the book of 1 Corinthians, we will learn that speaking in unlearned languages, speaking in tongues, is directed toward God. It's prayer. And the miracle is made because people hear you talking to God in their dialect, in their language, when you shouldn't be able to do that. And so that's exactly what happened here, and it got their attention. Verse 12, all were amazed, and they were perplexed, saying to one another, what does this mean? See, when you see something like that, when you hear something like that happen, I mean, if you happen to be standing right there, you not only heard the sound coming out of the sky with the mighty rushing wind, but you also saw the initial appearance of the fire of the Holy Spirit splitting up and going on these 12 guys, and then they start praising God in all sorts of dialects. Can you imagine if you'd been there for that whole thing? You would have been knocked down metaphorically by that sort of miracle, and you're wondering, what's happening? Now, add to that the fact that all religious Jews of this time period believe they're living in the last days when the Messiah is about to come and fulfill a whole bunch of prophecies. And so they're wondering, what's this all about? But not everybody is on board with that. Verse 13 says, but others were mocking, and they said, they're just filled with new wine. This is probably, I think, more the locals, the people from Judea, from Jerusalem, and they're hearing all this blah, 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 blah. You know, the way that other people talk in another language, we can't get our minds wrapped around it, right? It just sounds like noise to us. And so these guys are mocking, saying, they're just a bunch of drunks. They're just making all sorts of noise. And they want to write it off for that. I want you to, again, picture that we've got several hundred thousand people jammed into the temple courts of Jerusalem at this time because it's Pentecost, mandatory festival. Probably over a million people have gathered in and around of Jerusalem, and they are all pushing and shoving as best they can to get up on the Temple Mount, which probably accommodates only a couple of hundred thousand, maybe 250,000 people at one time. And so they're really jammed in there, and these guys are like, nah, it's just noise. It's just drunkenness. And then Peter, the designated spokesperson for the apostles, gets up. Verse 14, Peter, standing with the 11, so the full complement of 12 apostles that we saw at the end of chapter number 1, they're all there together. And so Peter stands up, and he lifted up his voice, and he addressed them. Men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem. That word dwelling here, is a reference back to verse number 5. These are not people that live here all the time. They are here from all over the known world. They're living here for the moment. So men of Judah, you locals, and all you visitors, let this be known to you. Give ear to my words. So pay attention. I need to talk to you. And then he responds, first of all, to the drunkenness comment. For these people are not drunk, as you suppose, since it's only the third hour of the day. Now, that's helpful to us. That means it's mid-morning. Let's just call it 9 o'clock by our standard. This is the time for prayer. The Jewish people had two official prayer and incense and sacrifice times during each day, mid-morning, mid-afternoon. And that's the prime time for people to gather to the temple. Here's another bit of evidence that we're talking about the house of the Lord being the house where they were at. And so they've probably just finished up with the incense prayer service, morning sacrifice service, and then this happens. And he says, are you kidding me? Really? You think that seriously religious people would be drunk out of their heads in the temple complex at 9 o'clock in the morning? That's not the way it works. And then he says in verse 16, but this is what was uttered through the prophet Joel. Now, we've run out of time just about for today, so I'm going to give you an assignment. I want you to find where this next passage comes from in the book of Joel and come back ready to kind of compare the Old Testament to the New Testament and see how Peter uses this as the launching point for preaching the very first gospel sermon about Jesus Christ.